Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. Being in your own head is a scary place to be. Even scarier when you realize that you're always in your own head. You're trapped in there. We all are. With our own thoughts to keep us company. For some, those thoughts are like companions. They're helpful. Soothing. For others, the thoughts, they're enemies. Intrusive. Destructive. Go to your thoughts. I know it seems strange to ask, but listen to your thoughts for a second. Do you feel you have control over them? Do you feel you are their creator? Yes? Well, lucky you, because some of us have voices that seem to have their own thoughts, voices that come from somewhere, and wherever that somewhere is, it doesn't sound good. Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. The Green Man. Norm McCoy's earliest memories would have been from being in an Ethiopian refugee camp. His mother, Nianyal Padiet, couldn't remember all the details in court, or maybe she was struggling with the English language being spoken in court. Either way, she did manage to share that her eldest son had been through abuses in that Ethiopian refugee camp. And whether he remembered them or not, Nor was screwed up by those experiences. And his mother felt that those experiences had made him strange. We're talking about experiences where people are being killed around you when you're a one-year-old little boy, two-year-old little boy, four-year-old little boy. He's in this camp for a long period of time in Africa, in a place that has been raped historically. And now you have all these people who are coming from it and being saved by the rest of the world, of which has raped this country. He grew up in a refugee camp of Africa, of Ethiopia, the place where we all kind of joke around about skinny kids with flies in their eyes. This is him. This is where he grew up. This is him. And those experiences, his mom thinks, made him strange. Rape, murder, himself being abused, whether it be rape or near murder, but blood and dust and starvation and horrific conversations all around him, an unstable base, certainly was his base. Her son, Nor, he said, "I hear voices, Mom," when they got to America. And her son, he had trouble making friends as a result of the voices that made him so strange. He was odd to everyone, including his own mother. Nor, he lived at a complex eventually after they traveled through America quite a bit. He lived in a complex of two-story tenements with his mother, stepfather, and five younger siblings. This in a quiet neighborhood of northeast Des Moines, Iowa, when we get to our story, him being 18, 19 years old. This landing spot followed he and his mother and father, like I said, traversing America and ending up in Iowa. Their escape from Ethiopia by way of refugee camp. Nora's father left the picture when they got to America, and Nora spent some time in multiple towns and cities of America. He remembers, reminisces about being on the mean streets of Omaha, Nebraska, which might make you laugh, but there's mean streets everywhere you could ever go. And on these mean streets of Omaha, Nebraska, he claimed to have witnessed a double homicide as a child, which brought him back to his roots and fucked him up. He was seeing some gang violence there and almost got brought into it. He was selling something called spice, which is not quite weed. It's trying to be weed. And his mom quickly grabbed him by the neck and said, "We're not doing that gangster shit. Here, we're going to become good citizens of the U.S. All of this to say that Nor had tough beginnings, which attracted him to rap music later on, gangster rap. He seemed to have an affinity for the gangster lifestyle and most likely would have become gang affiliated if not for his mother wanting more for him. And mom moved them to Des Moines, Iowa eventually, where she married a good man. His name was Janub Reith, who cared for Nor, his mother, and the rest of the kids. It was a full house of eight by the time Nor reached the age of 18. And maybe because of this, Nor fell through the cracks some. He'd hide away in his room with his phone most evenings. Not unusual for a teenager, though we'd come to find Nor was an unusual teenager. I have to remind you here that we're talking about the year 2014, which seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it? 11 years ago. But there were phones then, and, you know, you're on Facebook and you're screwing around, searching for stuff. We've been in this new society for a little bit of time now, a decade and a half, I guess, 2025, 2015. God, we've been dealing with the internet as a major part of our lives for much longer than I thought, actually. I mean, back to 2007, I think, that Facebook came out. So by 2014, yeah, I mean, it's well developed. We have been affected by other people's opinions so much. Other media outside of just regular TV shit that we used to watch when we were kids. And we, I'm speaking as a guy who was born in 1980. When I was a kid, I watched TV. I watched cartoons. I watched sitcoms. I watched commercials. I went outside. I rode my bike. I hung out with friends in a park. But for a long time now, including kids like for kids like Nor in 2014, the place you go when you're lonely is the internet. And the internet, if you look in the right areas of it, I don't need to tell you, will tell you exactly what you want to hear. What he wanted to hear about was murder. What he wanted to hear about and learn about was being a down and dirty rascal. His parents tried. They tried to keep control of him, and they seemed like good, hardworking people. They worked together at an inn of Des Moines, Iowa. So Nora's stepfather, Janub, was, and I hate how I'm saying Janub. Janub. I mean, he's also African descent, right? He was able to give Nora's birth date off the top of his head in interviews, which impressed me. Stepfathers don't always know the year you were born. They might know the date you were born because your mom celebrates it and makes it a big deal. But the year you were born can be tough as they weren't there when you were born. And you know what's funny? Later in my research, I find that Nor, at the time of the forthcoming crime, he was 19 and he was born May 25th, 1996. So actually, I'm fucking up his date of birth, too. His stepfather said his stepson was born May 25th of 1995, not 1996, in these interrogation videos I watched. So I was onto something there, inconsequential, but some stepdads and some researchers too, apparently, have trouble with the birth year of their stepkids or their subjects in the crime. And it's not their fault. With stepdads, you know, not knowing the exact year, but what I was saying got confirmed while watching an excellent YouTube channel on this case, Explore With Us, which you're probably all aware of. Explore With Us is an excellent YouTube channel for true crime, and I have a link to it in the show notes. Everyone seemed to care for Noor, but they had concerns. The young man had recently dropped out of Southeast Polk High School in this year of 2014. His mother demanded he get a job when he dropped out at 18 years old, and he did, lasting 2 weeks at a McDonald's before losing the job. Much will be debated later about what was going on in Noor's head. It's possible with his upbringing, the trauma of being an abused child refugee from Ethiopia, that Noor naturally felt at a place with normal American school children. And incredibly, I have a personal story that connects to this. I worked in a group home with a teenagers. I worked in a home where kids had just came out of juvie. I've talked about it before, but they came out of juvie and they're locked in a halfway house, locked at night. They would go up to their rooms. You had to lock the door so they wouldn't get out in the middle of the night. They can knock on it or press a call button and fuck with you most of the time, but try to ask you if they can come out for whatever reason, if they're being abused. I mean, you would listen, like myself, I would listen. There would be monitors up there and you could hear if anything fucked up was going on. Anyways, I worked in this halfway home for teenagers, and there was this kid who was there. He was an African refugee, actually an Ethiopian refugee. I didn't want to say that because it seems like I'm lying, because it's too connected to this, but it's true. I'll say his name. His name is Laban. And Laban, if somehow you're out there, please contact me. darktopicpod@gmail.com. So he was a very intelligent kid, very cautious, very smart, very funny, very outgoing. Different from all the other kids. You could tell he had actually been through shit, and he had. So one Christmas Eve, Laban and I and two other kids are in the group home, and they had nowhere to go, you know, like home. They weren't allowed to go home, visit with family, even if they could. Their families, at least in Laban's case, I think, were non-existent. And that, of course, is sad. So I decided to take them all out for Chinese food on Christmas Eve. And we get into the Chinese food restaurant, some dragon restaurant, it was called. And I pay for the buffet. And when it comes time to eat, they set the waters down with a little lemon in it and shit. And, you know, it's time to go eat a buffet. This young man, this Laban from the Ethiopian refugee camp and in this group home, refuses to get up and get any food. The other two, they're going out there and they're eating so many chicken balls. They're eating so much shit, ribs. But Laban, he just sits there drinking his lemon water, which he squeezes in. This is free. He says to me, this is free. Yeah, it's free. It's fucking lemon and water. Okay. And he drinks that. And he just watches us eat. And I remember asking him, why aren't you eating? And he said, you used your own money for this. I saw you pay them. I said, yeah, of course, I use my own money, but I make my money from the group home. He goes, I thought this was from them. I thought this was my money. I thought this was our money to eat here. This is your money. And I tried to talk him into joining us with the feast and tried to navigate what his concern was there, but he simply would not eat. At an all-you-can-eat buffet, a kid on Christmas Eve from Ethiopia, where they starved in refugee camps. He hasn't eaten today, and he will only drink the water that was free with the lemon. And he shut down about it. And later, once me and this young man, Labano, had built up more trust, months later, I asked him again why he hadn't eaten that day on Christmas Eve at the fucking all-you-can-eat buffet at the Chinese food restaurant. And he told me that he, at the time, did not trust my intentions. He'd never had someone do something nice for him for no reason without wanting something from him. He never fully trusted me, and I don't blame him. He did, however, allow me to get him a pizza on his birthday that summer, later that summer, the following year. And I left him my old GameCube when I left for a new job with the game NFL Blitz on it. He liked that game, Blitz. This victory of trust that I got with LeBron, it came in handy when I kidnapped him off the street later. I'm just kidding, guys. That's just a kidnapping joke that I wrote in here. But God, I hadn't thought of that for a long time. Some kids really can act like they got it all together, like LeBron had. He was funny, like I said, you know, charismatic, nothing bothers him. I'm kind of reminded of Will Smith, and nobody wants to talk about Will Smith no more, but in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, what is it called? The father episode, when his dad shows up and then his dad leaves. And Will freaks out about it. Phil freaks out on the dad, and then Will acts like he's all cool about his dad leaving again. And then they hug, and he says, "Why doesn't he want me?" If you haven't looked at that old Fresh Prince of Bel-Air episode for a long time, the father episode, I think it was called, you should watch that if you want to cry. He reminded me of that. I remember thinking that. Oh, God, this kid's just like Will Smith, or the character of Will Smith in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in that episode. He acts like he has it all together, but when you dig a little deeper, or when something reminds him of something horrible that happened to him, you get a glimpse. I just hadn't thought of that for a long time. They act like they got it all together, but inside they're just a scared little kid, like that kid, their trauma. They're bonded to their own trauma. People talk about trauma bombing, they talk about, but he's bonded. I am too, you know, bonded to my own traumas. And you might call that mental illness, to call back to your trauma in any given situation. And everyone's like, it's fine. Go eat the Chinese food. It's fine. This guy's fine. Right? Or, you know, for me, it's like, it's fine. Walk through that door. It's fine. It's a party. There's a bunch of people here. Everything's cool. It's fine. Meet my dad. You know, you start to go back to that trauma. And like I was trying to say, is you might call that mental illness when those people freeze up or leave in those situations, but I call it staying paranoid. Back to Nora McCoy. That name, I'm really fucking it up because there's this thing that happens now in Apple Podcasts and with Spotify where it will start to spell out what you're saying. And when you say Nora's name properly, N-G-O-R, it says the N-word in the text. So Nora, nobody knew what he got up to because he was such a loner. We now know that he liked to take videos of himself doing multiple backflips in a local park there in Des Moines, Iowa, which is a little weird, harmless, but certainly not the type of activity most 18-year-olds deem normal. All of his peers are driving cars and going to work at the age of 18, 19. They're going to college, and old Nora's doing backflips in the park, talking to himself, filming himself, talking to himself between sets of what he simply would later call doing flips. Nor loved doing flips. It exhausted him, and while flipping, the voices left him alone. If he wasn't out flipping as a way to keep himself from flipping out, Nor was writing and rapping. So his internet search history showed an obsession with rap beef, rap violence. Also, it seemed he had designs of becoming a male model. Nor was looking for a way to be collecting easy money, it seemed. But more than anything, money he could make independently. He didn't want to be a worker. He wanted to be working for himself. McDonald's, where he tried to work after he dropped out of high school, it wasn't for him because it involved working with people, working with the public. Nor wanted to be independent. He maybe wanted to be a drug dealer, but his parents were all over him and he could never get started, let alone away with it. So really what Nor wanted to be was a rapper. He went by the name Young God. After some research, I was able to uncover his YouTube channel, Young God TV. 33 subscribers. And staying that way after my visit, though he's not terrible, certainly not the quote, borderline retard type that his future attorney will try to present to a jury. Here, have a little hoot of Young God.
Johnny. Rockets.
I don't give a motherfucking hoot. I don't give a motherfucking hoot, nigga. I fuck your mother till she fucking hoot. I don't give a motherfucking hoot. Society gave too many fucking hoots. That's why they blind and they can't see the truth. But see me, I don't give a fucking hoot. Strike a nigga down like a fucking Zeus. The bitches worship me like I'm Jesus. Ain't the smartest, but I ain't no fool. You want me to...
And this continues to a point. He doesn't give a fucking hoot. He don't, and Gore doesn't give a fucking hoot.
And I'm steady flexing on these haters. I'm running shit like the Caucasians. Your money's...
Now, I wanted to play that last part there because I want to focus on that one lyric you heard at the end. It's, quote, I'm running shit like the Caucasians, end quote. That will come into play later when I try to tell you that the Green Man is envious. It was the evening of July 2nd, 2014, when from 19-year-old Norm McCoy's odd nature came a creature he'd later refer to as the Green Man, a four-armed entity that controlled him through this day's strange events. He can't seem to recall much later. This might be because of the Green Man, but his mother will share that it's more likely Captain Morgan's spiced rum's fault. Nor had taken a large cup of his parents' spiced rum and locked himself in the bathroom to drink it. They have one bathroom in this two-bedroom tenement with eight people in it. And this happened sometime, this drinking of the rum, between Nora's parents returning home from their work at the inn they worked at together at around 4 o'clock and dinner time. When Nora came out of the bathroom, a bathroom his mother was knocking on and sitting in front of to see what he was up to when he came out, he was drunk and he announced he was going out for a walk. His mother confronted him, grabbed the empty glass, you know, sheathed with rum. The empty glass sheathed with rum away from him. Nor told her to fuck off. And as she was yelling at him, he left the house. And he didn't return at all, by their estimation. But in reality, he did return. A couple of hours later, he snuck back into the house and went upstairs to his bedroom. Nor, when he returned sweaty and still a little tipsy, he quietly made his way upstairs. He stripped off his filthy clothes. He had a gray hoodie on with a red t-shirt, yellow lettering, Nike fucking bullshit on it underneath. And he had gray starter shorts with red and blue striping on. The voices in his mind are silenced, and the exhausted young man falls helplessly to sleep upstairs. At around 9 p.m., the police are at the door asking if Nor lives here. And his parents, his mother, says no. Well, yes, he lives here, but no, he's not here. He said he was going for a walk hours ago, but he's yet to return, officer. Stepfather Janub steps up, and the police show him a picture. It's a picture, a grainy picture, of Nor, wearing the gray hoodie and red t-shirt he'd gone and walked away from the house with today. And he says, yeah, that's Nor. Okay. The police say, please contact us if he returns. Then they leave. Nor's mother decides she better double check if he's home. She goes upstairs and soon finds her son asleep in his underwear. On the floor of the bedroom of Nor's is a gray hoodie. Nathaniel, his mother, she knows what she sees stained on it. Her own experiences in the refugee camp have been violent. Plenty of abuse and death whirling about in the dust. The stains on her son's clothing could only be the result of bloodshed. Her mind, its voice rarely making use of English, quickly produces the English word, murder. All right, Rosetta Stone, everybody. If you want to learn a new language naturally, speak it confidently. Rosetta Stone helps you absorb a language the way you learned your first. Through real-world context and conversation, no memorization, just practical skills you can use right away. Rosetta Stone is the leading language learning program available on desktop and mobile, designed to fully immerse you in your chosen language for a more natural and effective learning experience. I've used Rosetta Stone. I'm using it right now to learn English. As I stumble through this ad read. No, I've been trying to learn Japanese. I want to do that trip that I've been talking about, and I continue to learn through Rosetta Stone, and I find it to be a very enjoyable experience, easy way to go about learning. My favorite feature so far has been the built-in true accent. Speech recognition technology provides real-time feedback, helping you sound more natural. There's nothing that I fear more than people not thinking I'm actually Japanese in Japan. Now, I do enjoy knowing how close I am getting to the way it's supposed to be actually spoken. It's like having a personal language coach guiding you through your accent every step of the way. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Dark Topic listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Meanwhile, a young black man, somewhat matching Nor's description, is picked up, handcuffed, and held. He is nervous, and he overhears the reasoning on the cop radios. Someone has invaded a nearby home and attacked an elderly couple. Someone young and black with a gray hoodie. This young man is black with a gray hoodie. And by the way, he behaves in the surveillance from the cop car interior. He seems pretty worried that his choice of clothing today could be enough to go to prison. He gives a hoot. His eyes are blinking rapidly. He doesn't speak. His own voices have enough to say in his mind, no doubt. It's distracting being that worried. And lucky for him, he's much too tall to be the suspect and too far away from the crime scene. Police, they apologize and they take him to a restaurant, and instead of a prison meal, the young man gets himself something decent to eat for his trouble and for the concern he'd had of possibly being treated indecently. Not tonight. Tonight they know exactly who they're looking for, Nor McCoy. And the reason they know is because they caught him at the crime scene on video. This video, the grainy image I told you that they showed the stepfather. So they catch Nor in the flesh. Nor's mother has him by the ear, still in his underwear, when cops arrive, following her call. "What have you done, son? What have you done?" she's saying to him. He can't recall. While Nor waits in the interrogation room, he speaks to himself. Yeah, so he's talking to himself, and people are perplexed by this, thinking, oh my God, he must be talking to something in his head. We all talk to ourselves in our head. We have conversations with ourselves in our own minds, whether you understand that or not, or see it that way or not, you do. You have a thought, you counteract that thought, you come to conclusions, you do that. He's just talking out loud. Also, what I think he's doing here, he's saying out loud, this is crazy. I want to do something. Did I do something? This is crazy. He knows he's being filmed. This being, what do they call it, fucking retarded or whatever they called it, is not true. This kid is fairly sharp. I mean, he's not what they're going to later on say in his defense, that he's incapable of committing an act, that he's incapable of knowing what's going on. I believe he knows these cameras are on him, and he's speaking out loud to show the cameras and get the footage that we just heard. There's much more of it too in the show notes, that backs up the idea that he might be crazy. He's thinking ahead of that, right? In my opinion, this is crazy. I would never do something like that. I'm not evil. So, through the interrogation to come, Nor behaves like a normal teenager. Nothing like the cocky rapper Young God or the mentally ill person he'll later claim to be, controlled by the Green Man with four arms. He plays dumb and innocent until he finds out that they have him on video, standing outside of the door of a brutal crime scene. They have him on dash cam. And on a clearer video from the crew of the TV show Cops. I've been trying to hold that back. I've been being a little bit cute, fucking around here, just not doing a good job of it either. But there was a crew from the show Cops on the scene of the crime scene that I'm about to explain to you. And that's the image that Nora's stepfather was shown, was from one of the show, the Cops show producers' cameras. Yeah, that's my son. Incredibly, this Cops crew, they were on the scene, riding along with officers in Des Moines, Iowa, looking for content for the show. What they have in this case will be too grisly for television. Nearby the residence of Norm McCoy on East 46th Street sat the contrasting abode to his area of housing tenements, an estate, really, of an elderly couple, Rupert Anderson, 97 years old, and his wife, Harriet Anderson, 94 years old. The two had been longtime residents of Des Moines, and they'd seen it fall apart in some way. Nobody will fucking say this, but I can say it confidently that this has turned into a not great area, considering the crew from Cops is following cops around to calls here. Oh, it's Iowa. It's nice. Yeah. Oh, it's Nebraska. Oh, shit. Omaha. Isn't that something that Peyton Manning yells at before he throws a fucking touchdown? There's bad areas everywhere. The fact that the Cops crew is with the cops tells you where we are. But at one time, it wasn't this bad. But time has passed. This couple's 97 and 94 years old, and they've been running a dog kennel. It's called Vista Boarding Kennels for quite some time here. Now their grandchildren run it for them. But they live on the site, on the property. And it's this big, green, beautiful estate right beside these housing tenements. So a real contrast here. Nor, he went outside drunk to go do flips, right? But eventually he found himself out front of this place, the Vista Boarding Kennels. It was 7:30 p.m. Nor, supposedly under control of the green man as he saw him in his mind, this green man who had come into his mind with four arms, these tentacles, and control him. Under the control of the green man, he'd approached the residence of the elderly Andersons, knocked on the door that connected to where the dog kennel was and all this open space for the dogs to run. And tucked in his waistband was his mother's stainless steel, wood-handled cooking spatula. When the elderly woman answered the door, thinking this must be a customer of the kennel, Noor entered and began hitting her with the spatula. Mr. Anderson, 97 years old, sat in his recliner watching the Cubs game. Des Moines, Iowa Cubs are the AAA affiliate to the big league Chicago Cubs. Mr. Anderson, 97 years old, is turned on and he gets up to help his wailing wife. Harriet has been gouged in the scalp and shoulders with a strange yet nastily effective weapon in the spatula. Noor McCoy beats the old man to death with the spatula. When he tries to intervene, he breaks the wood handle in the process. Rupert Anderson, 97, manages to trigger his life alert bracelet before succumbing to his painful and humiliating death by spatula, for Christ's sakes. You live to be 97 years old, then one night you're watching the Cubs game, and some kid comes in with a green man controlling him and beats you to death with a fucking spatula. What a world. The response from Life Alert maybe spooked Noor. He's going through a box of jewelry when something stops him because the box of jewelry in the bedroom is open, but nothing is taken. And he tucks the spatula into his waistband before heading outside. He stands there waiting for response at this point while Harriet is crawling to a phone. Harriet, she gets to 911 and she doesn't know that her attacker is still in the house, outside of the house. She doesn't know that her husband's dead at this point. It's as if Noor reset by him going back up front when he heard the life alert alerts. He went back to the attack start point and now he simply stands there with the fucking bloody spatula tucked in his waistband at a sight over his red t-shirt. And he stands there as if this can be all undone if he stands still enough at the entryway. I saw when the cops came blazing into this scene, for a moment you will see Noor there with his hoodie, his gray hoodie and in his shorts, just standing looking into the abode of this elderly couple that he's massacred. Just standing looking. It's one of the creepier things. It's at dusk that you can see, again, in the show notes. Here's the call placed at 7:44 p.m. by a wounded Harriet Anderson. Her husband is dead, and she fears she could die as well. In fact, unfortunately, Harriet will pass away a year later at 90 fucking, I don't know, what is it? You know what they say, when one goes in a long relationship, the other one soon follows. But to go like this, not exactly a fairy tale ending, it makes you sick. It's tough to hear Harriet here in this moment while this fucking murderer is standing outside with a spatula still staring in the window. Though, you know, it's nice to hear how tough she was. It's nice to hear toughness in this world these days. So many bitches. It's all dudes in here except for these bitches. Eminem. So there's no fear in her voice. There's just more like annoyance in her voice.
Hello, 911. Somebody got in the house and attacked me and my husband, and I'm all bloody, and I'm an old woman.
This is crazy. You know, I drink. This is crazy, man. I don't know what happened.
And I'm all bloody, and I'm an old woman. Fuck. Sounds like my grandmother. It's all of our grandmothers, right? So, well, white ones. Sounds like a white grandmother. Let's be honest. All right. So, back in the interrogation room where Noor McCoy is sitting there acting crazy, maybe being crazy, talking to the voices in his head, maybe speaking to the green man, the investigators, they're done playing games as the information starts rolling in. They have the cops crew, TV show video footage of him standing outside. They have now, well, I'll explain. So Nor, he's on video and he is trying to play dumb up until the point where they show him, like, we have you on this video from our dash cams and from the cops crew video footage. They tell him that he can play dumb and lie all he wants, but they no longer have to sit here and suffer it. They found the broken spatula in his home. The weapon he can be seen concealing in his waistband as he walks away past a police dash cam after the cops and the emergency crews walk past him and go into the house. They're all like, hey, what's up, man? One of the police officers or emergency response team said later, oh, I thought it was their grandson. This guy's from Ethiopia, like super black, like a really black guy. I thought he was wearing black stockings underneath his shorts, but it's his skin. Like he's black and they're so white. You thought that was their grandson? I don't know. I guess you say shit to cover yourself up, right? So I got to stop. All right. So Rupert Anderson, 97, he's pronounced dead. And his wife is tended to in their formerly peaceful living room, now splattered with blood. And I want to say something about her injuries. I looked at those. I had a metal spatula as I was doing this episode. I was cooking some burgers. I was like, oh shit, I got like a very similar spatula to the crime I'm covering here. I'm going to tap myself on the head with this a little bit and see how it feels. It hurts. It fucking hurts so bad, not even trying. And if you think it's a joke to be killed by a metal spatula, it's not. This thing is, just try it. I mean, dunk. Dunk, it fucking hurts. I think I actually have a little indent now from doing what I did to myself. You'll understand how death can come from it if you want to whack yourself in the head with a metal spatula while cooking fucking burgers. So you'll understand how hurt Harriet was, how her husband had died. This old woman was beaten with a spatula before her husband intervened and probably saved her life. Because a green man, who I think of as a jealous young man, decided they were an enemy of his. And he don't give a hoot as he goes home. He strips, then falls asleep. Nor asks how much longer this is all going to take in the interrogation room after he's dead to rights. The interrogator, he scoffs. Then with heavy sarcasm, he replies, quote, why? You got somewhere to go? In January of 2016, Norm McCoy is found guilty of first-degree murder and attempted murder and attempted robbery with the jewelry case that he fled from once the life alert went off on Rupert's bracelet. Harriet Anderson, Rupert's wife, passed away before the verdict could be announced. Norm's lawyers drag out the process with his insanity defense. They insist that Nora was mentally incompetent, but I hope that I've proven and other YouTube channels or podcasts or lawyers, real fucking people, have proven that he was competent. I mean, with his rap, with his backflips. You know, he's not just some doy-oy-oy-oy-oy guy that you worry about in your neighborhood. He can fucking rap a little bit. And he can manipulate and he can, you know, play to the camera and all that. He's not mentally incompetent. His difficult life, though, I guess had to be taken into account. Although if it was true that every refugee from Africa coming to America or Canada or Australia, or Great Britain, Europe, wherever the fuck, if it were true that that causes you to become a murderer later on, we'd have a lot more murders attached to such situations. Normally, you get guys like I talked about earlier in Le Bon, where they're just troubled youth who turn everything into a little bit of paranoia and just trying to make a better life for themselves. At least I hope. Reach out, Le Bon, if you're hearing me. So his difficult life, it had culminated in an evening of madness, his lawyers said. And they said that evening of madness was fueled by Captain Morgan, spiced rum, not sponsored, which made it simpler for the young man with the voices in his head to be taken control of by what he knew of as the Green Man. Norm McCoy receives a sentence of life in prison plus 2 years, which kind of just fucks you, right? Those additional 2 years. Oh, shit, my whole life's over, but two more years of this shit? And he's ordered to pay $150,000 in restitution, which will be tough to get out of a kid with only 2 weeks employment at a McDonald's under his belt. Oh, and broken bloody spatula under that belt at one time as well. And that'll do it. I don't give a fucking hoot hoot. That's actually kind of a sweet song, man. 33 subscribers. I don't give a fucking hoot hoot. Being stuck in your head. Trying to be nice. I'm not talking about this case. I'm talking about myself or maybe some of you. I've always been stuck in my head because I'm always trying to be nice. Trying to figure somebody out and make the situation decent. You know, if you're saying something fucked up that I don't agree with, I go, yeah, change the subject. In my head, I'm like, change the subject. Don't argue with them about that because it's a waste of your time. Your family might be around you. Your kids could be around you. And you don't want to get in an argument. During the recording of this episode, you might hear a moment there. It's right in the middle where I had to pause. And I heard a guy talking loudly to my girl. Because I'm in my garage right here in the corner. And that's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion. I'm in the corner recording this. And I hear this fucking loud talk. And the door banging around. I hear my girl with her sweet voice speaking. And that's fine. This is a delivery happening. But then I hear it continue, and he's talking louder, so I get the fuck out, right? Like, I go in the middle of this episode. I might include it.
Like, there's all these streets that, obviously.
Well, I was thinking it was over this one, but it's not. You know, Cameron runs this way, and then Jeremiah.
Okay, you're close.
Down by Saskatchewan?
Yeah.
Good luck, man.
Yeah, you're close.
Thank you.
No problem.
And I go outside, and the guy fucking like was like, "Whoa, where'd you come from?" And I go, "What's the problem?" He goes, "I'm looking for James Street." And I go, "You don't got a cell phone?" He goes, "Yeah, I do, but it's out of data." I'm like, "You're a delivery guy, but you don't have a work phone? Like, you're out of data. Isn't that something that happened in, like, 1990 fucking 8? What are you talking about, out of data? There's unlimited data plans. You telling me you're a delivery guy who's out of data for on your phone, on your work phone, where you're using this fucking thing to find places? Anyways, my girl looks at me, and she goes inside. She gets her phone, and she starts trying to find the place. And I'm just standing there quietly with the guy. He puts his leg up on our porch as he's looking at me. And he's a scumbag. I can fucking tell it. And I say, "Take your leg off the porch. Take your leg off the fucking porch." And he takes it down. And she comes out and she tells him where the street is. He goes, "Thanks so much." And he leaves. And my girl's like, "Why are you so mean?" I say, "Data? Fucking data? Like, you know that's bullshit. And the guy's just trying to talk to you longer. He's a creep. The guy's a creep." Anyways, maybe he's not. Who fucking knows? Maybe I'm a fucking maniac. But I'm usually inside my own head. I will try to make things cool until someone around me is affected. If you're picking on my kids, you're picking on my girl, you're picking on my mom, you know, my dad back in the day, my friends, I'm fucking out of my head, right? I'm out of my mind. How about that? I'm out of my mind. I like that saying all of a sudden. Because when you're in your mind, you're like a librarian, right? You're pulling from, like an old school librarian, you're pulling from old experiences and you're slowly documenting or you're slowly pouring over the information and making a smart solution to the issue in front of you and you're being quiet. But when you're out of your mind, you just say what the fuck you feel. And you can't do that all the time because you sound mean. Right? But anyways, my girl, she messaged me later and she said he didn't know I had a guard dog in the garage. And she does. She fucking does. So sometimes you will hold those thoughts in your mind so long that they become rotten. And when they finally come out of your mouth, those thoughts are in your head. They have only one place to come out. Your ears take in the input. Your mind tabulates it, tries to figure it out. And then what you have, your responses through your mouth and through your eyes and the way you look at people. But if you hold all that shit too long, it becomes rotten. And that's become my problem. When I spit what I'm trying to say or what I want to say, the truth of what I feel about people, most often it comes out rotten and mean and nasty because I've been ruminating on it, right? And you've pushed me to a point where I got to pull that rotten plug out of my fucking head and spit it out my mouth right in your forehead. I don't know how to fix that. And I'm not sure what my point is, but I think what it is you need to get rid of that stuff in a healthy way as it comes. But for those of us who think that any altercation leads to violence, we hold it back because we're afraid of confrontation because we know how bad a confrontation can get. But doesn't it get so bad when you hold it in and you let it out? And doesn't it lead to just real anxiety when you hold it inside you too long? Some people say it causes cancer that when you hold back that long. I think that what I'm coming to the realization of as I get older is I need to tell people right away what I think. And if I can tell them right away, it won't be as rotten coming out of my mouth. It'll be... there's somebody outside. Fuck. I gotta go. It's like a fucking biker club outside. There's a way to do it that will be watered down and maybe purer and more to the point of what you're trying to say and maybe kinder and maybe healthier. All right. Okay. Ice cock doors like stay paranoid. I'll talk to you real soon. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.